What can we learn about a country and its people by looking at its cinema? Well, quite a lot in the case of Canada. Catherine Monk is a Canadian film critic. She's also the author of Weird Sex and Snowshoes and Other Canadian Film Phenomena. Monk talked to Anne Strangechamps about Canadian cinema.
If you think about how Canada was colonized, certainly around the same time as the United States, by similar colonizing forces in the French and the British, what you see, I mean, a movie like Black Robe, I don't know if you've seen it, it's a movie sort of about Canada's earliest colonial days and missionaries sort of going out into the middle of the wilds and meeting all these, you know, quote-unquote savages, the First Nations peoples, and essentially being either butchered or eaten alive by the snow. But if you look at Canada just as a landscape, it's so huge and overwhelming and white and empty and hostile that you think about our early ancestors and what they decided to live in. I mean, it's absolutely insane. I mean, even just surviving a winter in early colonial Canada would have been a miracle in and of itself and a real testament, a real desire of the will, so to speak. I mean, this is just an idea that someone decided to follow through. I mean, it really makes no sense to be up here. I mean, think about it in a very strictly intellectual sense. I mean, Canada is really a land of survivors. The people that didn't die are the people that had the chance to write the history. And I think that residing underneath every single little bit of historical content, whether it's on the French side, the English side, or even on the First Nations side, which is something that we've actually had a chance to see now thanks to Atanarjuat, the Fast Runner, and its success, is this idea of survival, that these are people that decided to stick around. They are people that not only managed to survive, but in some ways perhaps even thrive. And not only that, there's also the knowledge, which I think runs all the way through the Canadian psyche, of survivor guilt, that we might have survived, but so many countless others perished. Do we deserve this fate? Do we deserve to be alive when so many other worthy people didn't?
One of the most seminal Canadian films that you write about is the 1997 movie The Sweet Hereafter, Adam McGoyan's film. And this was based on the Russell Banks novel about a school bus crash in a small town. And survival guilt just runs through that whole film, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a beautiful and stark and I think a really eloquent example of how that survival guilt isn't only sort of shown on screen, because there's very little sort of in-your-face emotion considering the high drama of what takes place in that movie. I mean, a whole school bus full of kids goes down in the frigid, icy lake. We don't get the symphonic strings. We don't get sort of these grand tableaus of mourning. We see people struggling to carry on with their ordinary, boring daily routines. And how do they manage to fit what's not there into their life? How do they manage to deal around this giant gaping hole within? Adam McGoyan, I think, is a perfect example of what Canadian film directors do best, in that it's what's not said that becomes far more interesting than what is said. People criticized that film a lot in Canada. Either people loved it, loved it, loved it, and I count myself in that group, or people found it way too cold and sterile and alienating, and it just wasn't something that they felt they could warm up to, that it didn't have the sort of empathy that people expected it should have given the subject matter. I think what Egoyan does best is he sort of puts us in the void, and instead of making these connections for us, and this is something that all Canadian filmmakers generally, and I'm speaking generally, do, is they tend to fragment time, they tend to give us a broken narrative, and it's up to us as the viewer to participate and put it together. I mean, Canadian films are often called ambiguous, you know, lacking closure, that you never really know what happens, that there's no sort of rewarding ending, and things rarely ever have a happy ending in a Canadian movie. But I think that's a great challenge as a spectator, that we're not sort of spoon-fed, okay, and now the plane takes off and we see it taking off, and then the plane is in the air, and we see the plane in the air, and then we see the plane land. And, you know, American films have this habit of giving us this stock footage to show us what's happening in certain time and space. And I think,
well, we're a simpler people, you know.
And that's not, I mean, of course not. That's certainly not. And yet this is, you know, something that people have come to expect, I think, in a cinematic tradition. And certainly a lot of great American directors and independent directors go out there and fragment time and play with device. But, I mean, it's because America and Hollywood specifically has created this wonderful formula that we now, all of us, I think everybody on the planet, intuitively understands, because it does work in a logical fashion. It fits into the way that human beings process information. There's a reason why Hollywood has reigned supreme, because it makes sense to us as human beings. Mm-hmm. It gives us an ability to go out and deviate from that model. I think other great cinematic film traditions have looked at what's happened and taken what they can from American filmmaking and the Hollywood tradition and learned to subvert it. And I think that's what Canada does very well, is sort of subvert these elegant truisms that Hollywood has offered.
Do you have a favorite scene in The Sweet Hereafter?
The scene that always makes me cry in that particular film is the flashback scene, Ian Holm thinking back on the day that he saved his daughter's life. His daughter's a drug user, and he gives us this story about when she was a child, and there was this perfect harmony, there was this idyllic vision of what a family should be, and there's just an overhead shot, sort of like a godlike eye down on the world, and there's a sleeping mother and a sleeping father and this beautiful cherubic child sandwiched between them, which is sort of this beautiful, it's the ideal, right? It's the human ideal. It's safety and all things comforting. And then he tells us that he had to cut her open in order to save her life, that she'd been stung by a bee, that her throat was closing. The idea of taking the blade to his child's throat and the anxiety that he, and the emotion that he has in his voice as he's telling us that moment, that in order to save her, he had to nearly kill her, that he had to violate his daughter's skin, and sort of the whole Abraham thing, and a variety of different images come into play. But I think just the raw emotion in Holmes' voice and that picture, and understanding in that moment how much he truly loves his daughter, how much he would do to save her, that intangible bond between a parent and child, and that's what gave the movie its emotional force. And that's the scene that started to make me cry. And after that scene, I didn't stop crying. I was crying all the way till the tail credit.
It was an unforgettable drive. I was divided into two parts. One part was Daddy singing a lullaby to his little girl, and the other part was a surgeon with a knife ready to cut into her throat. I waited for the second Zoe's breath stopped to make the incision.
What happened? What happened?
Oh, nothing. We got to the hospital in time. I did not have to go as far as I was prepared to go. But I was prepared to go all the way.
I want to ask you about a film that I think is considered a kind of archetypal Canadian film, Guy Maddin's movie Careful.
Oh, Careful. Oh, absolutely. Definitely a seminal and very much emblematic of what Canada does. We've got the maple leaf flags waving all the way through it. We've got broken language. Language is something that tends to get broken as a result of our linguistic differences in this country, that we have two mother tongues and we have a First Nations reality, which puts us all into context. I think Guy Maddin's work, it's black and white. It harkens back to sort of the Leni Riefenstahl Mountain films that were made. He uses sort of Nordic language, a sort of nefarious Nordic tongue that never really makes sense. We have a father and a daughter madly in love with her father without him knowing. And we have people. They have to be very careful in their little town because there's this constant risk of avalanches. So in order to survive, people must be quiet. And that tends to be, I mean, if you look at Canada's place in the political reality as it is, we tend to be very quiet.
So that's what careful means. These are people who all have to walk around speaking in very soft voices.
Absolutely. You don't want to trigger an avalanche to come and kill everybody. And I think, you know, Canada's often called the mouse next to the elephant. We don't want to get stepped on. I mean, I think every Canadian is well aware of the fact that if for some reason we really upset our neighbors down south, that we'd have tanks moving in tomorrow, that there would be a no contest fight. Obviously, we don't think that would ever happen, but there's always this don't upset the tea kettle, you know, just let's everybody just be calm and be polite. And Canadians are notoriously polite. If you bang into us, we'll say we're sorry. This is just the Canadian way. Our key to survival has been to lay low, stay quiet, and maybe the polar bear or the grizzly bear will walk by you if you play dead.
What's the best scene in Careful?
Oh, well, that's just a beautiful movie. I think the scene that sticks with me is when the woman who lusts after her father, she decides to lead these people into her little ice cave where they all decide to freeze to death, or she sort of lures them into freezing to death, which I think is sort of another great way. I mean, and, you know, people have gone out there and subverted that whole idea of freezing to death. There's a lot of freezing by death in Canadian film. No great mystery there. But one of my favorite examples is Highway 61 starts off with a corpse that's found dead in a bathtub. And then their job is to take this frozen corpse all the way down south. And they go along Highway 61 to bring the corpse back. So there's quite a lot of dark humor. The films are very dark, but they're also quite funny. I think if you look between them, the lines, and you sort of just find a little breathing room between the frames, you'll find that there's actually quite a lot of humor. And I think Guy Madden is wonderfully funny. I mean, the saddest music in the world. If you're sad and you like beer, I'm your lady. There's a lot of humor to be found in the works of even the darkest Canadian auteurs.
Listen to the sounds of Winnipeg, the wide breathing of a nocturnal city in this sad, sad world.
We at Musket Beer are proud that Winnipeg has been chosen 4 years in a row by the London Times as the world capital of sorrow in the Great Depression. In recognition of this honor, we will be hosting a worldwide contest to determine which nation's music truly deserves to be called the saddest in the world. Aspiring virtuosos of tearful melody are welcome to travel here and lay claim to the jewel-studded crown of frozen tears and $25,000. In prize money. That's right.
25,000 Depression era dollars.
It's Isabella Rossellini in a scene from Guy Madden's film The Saddest Music in the World. Catherine Monk is the author of Weird Sex and Snowshoes and other Canadian film phenomena. She spoke with Anne Strange Champs.